We'll get this going. We're going to look at some of the details, some of the things we've just talked about. We'll just look at them. Here's our map. Where's Timnah? Timnah's just south of Jerusalem. Hebron is there, and Timnah's just north of Hebron. That is where our narrative begins. Judah went down from Hebron to Timnah. There's a narrative sense. This whole story is going downhill. And Jacob says, I will go down to my grave. Why? He says that back in 37. Why? He says, I'm going to go down to my grave in grief. Why? Because he's lost Joseph. Joseph's dead. Joseph was taken down. Why? Because his brothers sold him. That's in 39. So you got this word, this verb, down, down, down. Here we're going down, folks. So in 38, it's about 20 or 30 years. Now this, you get to 39, it's a little more compressed. Now the first thing we find out, the Lord puts him to death. Now this is the first time in the Bible where you have the Lord putting an individual to death. We don't know, we don't have any idea what he did. Now Onan, he put him to death also. Now Onan, there's a little bit of reason why you can see why God put him to death, because he disobeyed his father, would not carry out the responsibilities to the other brother. Now here's where Becky brought the point in. Well, so how come Judah doesn't get struck dead for withholding that third son? And again, the levirate marriage rule is the marriage of a man to a dead brother's wife. He's supposed to take over that responsibility, provide the brother with an heir. Now, Judah is very deceptive. And what he does next is a little bit like what Rebekah did when she went to Isaac and she says, you know, we don't want Jacob marrying a Canaanite woman. We should send him away. And Isaac goes, yeah, that's a good idea. But here, Judah says to Tamar, go live with the widow in your father's house until Shelah grows up. Like, go away, will you? Because the text tells us what he's thinking. What's he thinking? He may die too, just like his brother. So who's he blaming for their deaths? You got this one woman married, you know, involved with two sons, and they both die. Makes you wonder. Maybe she's the jinx here. It's not even clear that Onan died because he refused to have a child with Tamar. That's not even that clear, because of the first son dies, just like God doesn't give a reason. There's a reason, but God's not giving us the reason. He's thinking, it's got to be something to do with her. So he wants her out of there. He just wants to get rid of her. You got Judah, and he's the fourth son of Jacob. Reuben's just been disqualified. Simeon's been disqualified. Levi's been disqualified. Judah, number four. The presumptive nominee for the firstborn. All of a sudden, he's got no heirs following him. His three sons got no heirs. So where's this line going? That's the question Moses is putting in your mind. So where's the line going? Well, here's where it's going. Here we got this woman. She's going to dress up like a prostitute. And 38 tells us that Judah saw her, thinks she's a prostitute because she'd covered her face. He doesn't recognize her. But she's dolled herself up like a prostitute, and they start to arrange this. Well, you know, can we get together? Yeah, you know, well, how much is it going to be? And they try to haggle over a price, and he says to her, I'll send you a young goat. And she looks around, well, you don't have it with you. You got to give me something as a pledge. See, what do you want me to give you? There's where he's made his mistake, right there. Obviously, you can see where his mind is focused. It's not on business. Because she says, well, here's what I want. I want your seal and cord and the staff in your hand. To us, that means nothing. Seal and the staff. Who cares, right? She's coming into this aggrieved. She's not innocent. She's been deceived. She's no longer fooled by this, oh, go live with your father till Shelah grows up. Enough time has gone by. Shelah's ready now for a wife. She knows he's just going to forget her. He's never coming back. So she pretends to be a common prostitute. Now, that's important in this narrative. A common, everyday prostitute. And the irony in all this is, you think, well, that's a horrible sin he's committing. He's having relations with a prostitute. In their culture, in the Canaanite culture, adultery is condemned. You can lose your life for adultery. But, you know, prostitution's allowed. So in their culture, what Judah is doing is not wrong. His wife has died. That's why he's gone down to this town. And what he's doing is not wrong at all. But what he does do, he gives her this. And man, that's when he's not thinking, because giving this is the equivalent of doing this. I want your credit card. Because that seal and cord, you know what that is? That's the seal that allows him to transact business. That's money. The staff, that identifies him, because this staff is unique, uniquely marked to every individual, and every individual in the tribe has their own individual staff. So I want not only that, I want this too. So I want, this is equivalent to a credit card and a driver's license. I'm going to hold this until you bring me that goat. Judah ben Jacob. Yes. So he sends his friend, Adullah. He sends him down. He says, look, take this goat down there and pay that woman off, because, and then get my stuff back. It's really important he gets his stuff back, because here he is. He got no credit card. He got no driver's license. And he wants to get this back, so he sends him down there. And he goes down there, and he goes, so this guy's coming down, and he's asking for a prostitute. Now, who are the guys he's asking going to think he's asking for?
Himself.
So he doesn't want to associate himself with a common prostitute, so he asks for a temple prostitute. Because a temple prostitute was a totally different thing than a common prostitute, and Tamar had dressed herself up as a common prostitute. This word in Hebrew is a kadesha, from Hebrew kodesh, means holy one. But Kodeshah is a holy woman. So a temple prostitute, where is the holy woman, was what he's saying literally, who is beside the road. The guys look around, they go, there's never been any temple prostitutes here. For a man to go to a temple prostitute would elevate him before the gods. And so this was a good thing to do. So he goes away. You know, he's not going to ask any more questions. I don't want these guys thinking I'm looking for a prostitute. So he goes away. He goes away and he tells Judah, I went down there, I couldn't find her. So here's your goat back. What's unfortunate about this is he doesn't get his credit card and his driver's license back. So about 3 months later, in the scheme of things, and you know what happens, Judah gets told, your daughter-in-law Tamar is guilty of being a prostitute. Goes back to the word, a common prostitute. Not a holy woman, they say, and not only that, she's pregnant. So Judah makes a verdict. As judge, jury, and executioner, he says, bring her out and have her burned to death. Not very gracious, is he? Out her and burn her. Make everybody know what she is and burn her alive. Well, she's not going to let him get away with that. I'm pregnant by the man who owns these. Anyone recognize them? He's busted. Of course, he recognizes them. And immediately, he says the most important thing in the chapter right here. Here's the center of the chapter. She is more righteous than I, since I wouldn't give her to my son Shelah. There he admits the whole thing. Notice how he says, I would not give her to my son. Nor had he ever intended to give her to his son. He's admitting it all. She's more righteous than I. In Hebrew, it's like this. She is righteous, I am not. Isn't that amazing? Now, what's so important here is this is the greatest change in a person in the whole narrative. Judah truly repents. Is there anyone in the narrative that needs to change more than he does? Think of his callousness, the way he sold his younger brother. You know, think of his callousness toward her. Think of the way the immorality that he's committed. He's married women and into a family that obviously God is unhappy about, because of the results that you see. So the question is there a law that they couldn't marry a Canaanite? No. But was it a wise thing to do? No. So this is a critical, important event in this story, his repentance. And this is grace. What a calloused, evil, wicked man. How could God use this man? But he does. Now, we find out again that Red loses again. Red lost before. Red loses again. Here's the thing. Midwife ties a scarlet thread around one guy's wrist. Other guy comes around, passes him on the left, and breaks out. And he was called Perez because he breaks out. And when the linebacker can break through the line and make the touchdown, he He's broken out. Is that what they say in sports? I'm really ignorant on this, but the other guy, then he comes out second, who stuck his hand out with a scarlet thread. They named him Zerah. Means red dawn. It's the first red you see as the sun comes up in the morning when the dawn is red. So he breaks through first like the red dawn, but Perez comes around the left, breaks through the line, and goes for the touchdown, and he gets to be the firstborn. And again, it's just like Jacob and Esau, but here's the amazing thing. To Judah were born Perez and Zerah by Tamar. Now, the only thing I want you to see here are the italicized names, because you're familiar with Boaz. Boaz was born to a woman named Rahab. Because here's the interesting thing. Rahab is really a prostitute. Tamar, was she a prostitute?
No.
She's someone pretending to be a prostitute. You think, well, that's terrible. You have this guy committing immorality, woman who's pretending to be a prostitute, and he gets to be in the line of the Messiah. But then you come on down later in the line, and Matthew's pointing out this woman, Rahab, she's not pretending to be a prostitute. She really is a prostitute, and she's going to be in the line of the Messiah. The sad thing about Rahab, she's still called Rahab the prostitute. You know, you think that she gave that up. Now, this goes on then. Obed is the son of Boaz, marries Ruth. And then you have Obed has Jesse, and now you're getting down to where it's familiar, aren't you? Jesse is the father of David the king. Who's the descendant we're interested in? David the king?
Jesus,
yeah. That's any question you ask in a group of five-year-olds in a Bible class, and they'll say Jesus, they'll be right 50% of the time. So that is the descendant we're interested in. So see, does God bless Judah? Does Judah deserve it?
No.
Isn't it wonderful that God blessed Judah?
Yeah.
Amen. It is. It really is. God writes on crooked lines. But is that the best way to go? I'm going to walk a crooked line, so God will bless me. But that's not the best way to go. The best way to go, we find in the next chapter. Because we come to Joseph now. 39:2-6 says it's just blessing. That God blesses Potiphar's house, and he blesses Joseph. And man, it's his blessing. So he gets sold into slavery. He's being blessed. This is great. And the Lord blessed not just Joseph, but he blessed Potiphar because of Joseph. So everything is really going well. What this chapter is saying, there's a necessity for obedience and faithfulness on our part if we want to really experience who God is. What's going to happen is, you know the story, Potiphar says, come, be with me, we'll have some sport, we'll play some games. He says, no one's greater in this house than I am. My master's withheld nothing from me except you. How could I do such a wicked thing against Potiphar and sin against God? See, Joseph really, really could have said, you know, so what, I mess up. Who's going to know? God's blessed me. He's going to provide. That is dangerous, dangerous thinking. And see, what Joseph is here is he's at a turning point. He could have gone either way. That creates a tension in the narrative. What's he going to do? And he's being tempted day after day after day after day. And he finally gets to the point where he's just going to run. This is all about character. This is comparing his character to Judah's character. What is character? He's in a circumstance that he knows he could be in trouble, but we also know he could say, well, so what? I can get away with this. God will still provide. Because we just saw him do that with Judah. But he doesn't do that. He doesn't take that course because of character. So what is character? Success in temptation. Success in temptation depends more on character than it does on circumstances. So the circumstance here that Joseph finds himself in is really, really difficult. But it's his character that sees him through. Why does his character see him through where Judah's character took him down to the depths of immorality and deceit? Here's what Joseph had that Judah didn't have. Character rests on commitment to the will of God. So his commitment to the will of God brings him into a very, very close relationship with his God. But what happens to his circumstances? There's the thing that troubles us. Because where does he go now? See, chapter 38 is not an interruption because this character study between a callous and wicked man, Judah, and a committed and faithful man, Joseph, is one where we see depravity here in action, and we see righteousness here. That's what we see in action. But you know what we don't see? That both men are elect of the Lord. They're both men who God has had put his hand on, and they both belong to God. And God's going to do different things through each one of them. What we would do is say, okay, let's just wipe Judah off, and let's give all the blessing of the firstborn and the line of the Messiah to Joseph. See, this is how Moses is setting us up in this narrative. Because remember, at this point, we don't know that Perez is going to be in the line of the Messiah. If you come to this as a first-time reader, you don't know where these sons are going to end up. But what we're anticipating in the narrative is that there's got to be someone to carry on the line of blessing through Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. You go, Joseph, that's got to be it, because he's the good guy. And that's where Moses fools us, because God fools us, because our human wisdom cannot comprehend his plan completely. 20-some years have passed. Judah is completely broken by sin. Joseph is victorious over sin. Judah's free to walk around. He's up there in the land. He's probably enjoying his crops, and Joseph's in prison. And that's where we find him. Who do you think feels better, is more joyous and satisfied in his heart of the two men? Judah, who's walking around free, or Joseph, who's in a jail? Joseph has his character and his integrity. Judah is broken. And I really, really think that if he could have talked Moses into taking this chapter out, he would have wanted it removed. I know I would have. The Hebrew slave you brought us, she says, he came to make sport of me, just to play around with me. But as soon as I screamed for help, he left his cloak beside me, his garment, his robe. That's what condemned him, ran out of the house. Now here's the interesting thing. Potiphar hears the story. He heard her say this, give this whole description. When he heard her say, this is how your slave, Potiphar, you brought, when he heard her say that, he was really, really angry. The question is, why is he angry? It's possible he knows his wife's character. Who she put the blame on?
Him.
Notice that? That's very subtle, isn't it? He knows Joseph's character, and then add to that what's happened in his house since Joseph's come. Great stuff going on. Oh, man, I think that's why he's so angry, and I think that's why he does this. I think that's why he put him in this prison. He's like, you know, jail's jail. No, jail is not jail. There are caves where they would put men, and that's where they would die off. Because this was like a holding area they would be until the king decided what to do with them. That's why he put him there. So this is a perfect place to put a person that you don't want to be really harmed. Because he's not going to lose his life until the king decides to separate his head from his body. If Potiphar believed what his wife said, he could have done what to Joseph? Killed him. He's a slave. He's not an Egyptian with full rights. See, there's the other side of the question. What could he have done with him? This really gives you some insight into this is not an easy place for him. Look at the shackles, fetters. His neck was in irons. Until what he foretold came to pass. And what's that talking about? What we're going to read next week are the dreams. Till the word of the Lord proved him, this is the line I want you to see, proved him true, proved him righteous, proved him as a man of God. Then the king sent and released him. That's a preview of what we're going to get into next week. The question came up last week, and I said, when you read this week, I want you to think about these questions that you raised and I raised. Do you think Joseph was arrogant, naive, and a tattletale when he was living back with his brothers before they sold him? Do you really think that that's his character, that he was a naive and arrogant and somewhat deceptive person as a young man? Now, it's hard to make that conclusion now, isn't it? Many, many writers will write and say, yeah, the reason they sold him and the reason they took his robe because he was an arrogant little tattletale. And people really believe that. But I don't think they're analyzing the narrative carefully enough. Because as I pointed out to you last week, who does Joseph model? Jesus, said the 50% answer there. See, he spoke the truth clearly to his brothers about the dreams. And as all legalists are wont to do, anytime they see God blessing someone who they don't think deserves the blessing, they get angry. They hate that. He's treated cruelly by his own brothers for speaking the truth. And again, as I pointed out last week, if Jesus had not proclaimed himself to be the Son of God, the Pharisees and the Sadducees would not have had the big problem with him. But that's why they want to stone him. He should have kept his mouth shut. He doesn't. And neither does Joseph. He depends on God to provide justice. Notice, if he were a tattletale, wouldn't he have spoken up about Potiphar's wife? Wouldn't he have said, no, no, that's not right. She did it. Or he would have told before. No, he keeps to his own counsel between himself and God. He doesn't speak out to defend himself. Again, a model like Jesus. He does not defend himself. And when he's falsely accused and charged, what does he do? He submits, because he assumes that this is God's way of taking care of him. This is the disturbing thing about this chapter for me. He does the right thing. He overcomes the temptation. He's victorious, and he ends up in prison. A little bit scary. 39:1, Joseph had been taken down to Egypt, and there's a blessing there. The Lord blessed Potiphar because of Joseph. But while Joseph was in the prison, notice this. The Lord was with him in the prison, right? He showed him kindness and granted him favor in the eyes of the prison warden, and the warden put Joseph in charge. Here's a repetition of what happened with Potiphar, a repetition again. And the warden paid no attention to anything under Joseph's care. So you can see that I think things started out rough for him, I think as the psalm says, but I think they got easier for him. And I think other prisoners are being blessed by this man of this character who can talk about a God that shows mercy and grace. We don't know that. But Joseph was faithful, not only in Potiphar's house where he's a slave, but where he's a prisoner. So look at this. This chapter opens and closes with blessing on other people while Joseph is in these dire circumstances. And what are the Abrahamic promise that's so important? The third blessing there is those who bless you, I will bless. I will bless all nations through you. That's what's happening. That's actually being carried out here through the obedience of Joseph. God is blessing other people in the midst of his harsh circumstances. So the Lord can bless a slave. Not only that, can bless others through the slave. The Lord can bless a prison through the prisoner who God has his hand on that prisoner. And he blesses other people. Amazing, because of the faithfulness of one person who was willing to go through awful circumstances. So who went through awful circumstances so I can have salvation? And so you can have salvation. That's why I think he's a model. We're going to go Genesis 40 through 41 for next time. Joseph and his dreams. And as you read this, I want you to think of this. Compare and contrast the dreams of 41 with the dreams of 37. That's where Joseph loses his coat. Yeah. Okay? John, would you like to pray for us? Close? Huh? Please? Good. Thanks.